Imagine buying a $500,000 piece of specialized machinery for your factory.
Okay.
You bring it in, you bolt it to the concrete floor, you hire all these technicians to calibrate it, and only then do you realize your factory doesn't actually manufacture the specific product this machine was built to assemble.
Right. I mean, you'd be fired by the end of the week.
Completely unhinged, right? You'd be packing up your desk. Yet today, July 13th, 2026, corporate leadership teams, especially out here in highly competitive markets like Orange County, they are doing the digital equivalent of this, like every single day.
It is a phenomenal blind spot. Honestly, we have this collective delusion that complex organizational friction can just be moved over by, swiping a credit card for a new software subscription.
Exactly.
We literally bolt the digital machinery to the floor before we even know what we're trying to build.
And the stakes have just gotten so high. I mean, you look at the technology landscape right now, and it is moving at absolute breakneck speed.
Oh, yeah. Fast is an understatement.
Right. And if you're leading a business, you are under immense pressure to adopt new AI tools, specifically for things like search visibility and digital marketing, just to keep your head above water.
Yeah, but your budgets are tighter than they were like a couple of years ago.
Exactly. You can't afford to guess anymore. Which brings us to our mission for today. We are taking a deep dive into a very timely piece of source material. It's called the AI Search Visibility Scorecard for OC Brands in 2026.
And the real value of this specific document is that it functions kind of like a set of brakes. Yeah,
Breaks.
because the entire tech ecosystem is designed to accelerate your purchasing process. They want you to buy fast. This guide is basically a practical blueprint to slow your tech decisions down just enough to, avoid a massive, costly disaster.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we even get to the idea of a scorecard, we need to talk about the engine of the car we're supposedly buying.
Yeah.
The guide focuses heavily on AI search visibility. And for someone listening who might just think of this as, I don't know, a shiny new Google search bar on their company intranet, what are we actually talking about under the hood?
That is the perfect place to start, because the misunderstanding of the tech is exactly what drives the bad purchases.
Right.
An AI search tool in 2026, it isn't just indexing keywords. It's a system that ingests your company's massive piles of unstructured data. We're talking PDFs, historical Microsoft 365 emails.
Oh, wow. All the email.
All of them. Messy customer service logs, project management tickets, everything. It uses a large language model to find semantic connections across all of that chaos.
Okay, so it's making sense of the mess.
Exactly. Think about public platforms like Perplexity AI, which
Yeah.
synthesizes answers from across the web rather than just, handing you 10 blue links.
Right.
Enterprise AI search visibility brings that localized, synthesized intelligence into your proprietary company data.
So it's essentially reading and cross-referencing everything your company has ever written to give an employee, or maybe a customer, a direct synthesized answer.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds incredibly powerful, but also, I mean, incredibly invasive if you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, it requires deep integration. It needs API access, permissions, massive data flow, which is why the guide insists that you have to define your operational gap before you look at a single vendor.
Makes sense.
The text actually knows that if your team is out there Googling, like, AI search visibility scorecard, it's a symptom. It usually means you already feel the pain of an internal gap.
Yeah, and the source specifically calls out a few of those pain points, things like operational risk, unclear internal ownership, weak documentation, or, and this one really fascinated me, a vendor relationship built on trust rather than process.
Trust is a wonderful thing for your personal life.
Right.
But in enterprise architecture, trust without process is basically gross negligence.
Wait, really? Gross negligence? Oh, absolutely. If you trust a vendor that your data is syncing correctly without an automated process to verify that sync, you are effectively flaying blind.
Wow.
The guide demands that leaders define the exact business outcome they want, the specific risk they need to reduce, or the exact experience they want to change before they look at any systems or integrations.
See, I feel like buying tech before defining that problem is like going grocery shopping while you're starving.
Yes.
You don't have a meal plan. You just wander the aisles throwing expensive, shiny items in the cart. You get home, you've spent $300, and you still can't make a coherent dinner because you bought, like, hot fudge, a block of cheddar, and a single eggplant.
That is painfully accurate.
But let me challenge this a bit. The technology we're talking about is genuinely revolutionary. Isn't it incredibly tempting for companies to let the tech dictate the outcome?
Oh, of course.
Like they see it to go, this AI's ability to synthesize our disorganized data is so cool, let's just buy it and invent a problem for it to solve. It is the ultimate temptation. And the guide explicitly warns against this. They call it the tool-first trap.
The tool-first trap.
Yeah. And the mechanics of why this fails are incredibly predictable. When you start with the technology, you get distracted by the demo.
Oh, the shiny demo dashboard.
Right. The vendor shows you a beautiful, seamless dashboard in a controlled environment. But because you didn't map out your internal data silos or your legacy system constraints or, you know, your user access rights beforehand.
It just breaks.
Exactly. That beautiful system hits a brick wall the second it touches your reality. So you spend months trying to contort your business to fit the tool rather than the tool serving the business.
Which means you end up with a very expensive, very intelligent paperweight.
Basically, yeah.
So to avoid the starving grocery shopper scenario, you need a recipe. Let's say a company has defined the outcome. They say, we need to reduce customer support response times by 30% by surfacing internal documentation faster.
Oh, good outcome.
Now we get to the core framework of our source material. How do they actually evaluate their options? The text hammers these four mandatory golden questions.
And these are the questions that strip away the sales pitch entirely. Question one, what evidence supports the recommendation?
It's not just promises.
Right. We aren't talking about future roadmaps or case studies from totally different industries. We want empirical evidence that this tool solves our specific use case.
And question two, who owns the outcome after launch? I love the pragmatism here. It forces someone to put their neck on the line before the contract is even drafted.
Exactly, because shared accountability usually means zero accountability.
Yeah, that's so true.
And question three asks, what risks should be handled before implementation?
Oh, that's clever.
It's a brilliant psychological trick. It forces the vendor to admit that their product isn't a magic bullet. It admits it requires heavy lifting on the client's end, like cleaning up that Microsoft 365 data before the AI even tries to read it.
Wow. And then question four, how will success be measured after 30, 60, and 90 days? We are definitely going to dig deeply into that 90-day measurement later because of the psychology behind it is fascinating. But beyond those four questions, the guide lays out a massive scorecard criteria matrix.
It's a very comprehensive list.
It is. Capability, security, implementation quality, communication, documentation, support model, reporting, scalability, cost transparency, and exit readiness. Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's talk about the last one. Exit readiness. Why are we planning the divorce before the wedding?
Yeah.
I mean, if we are spending all this time finding the perfect tool, why sit down with a brand new vendor and demand an exit strategy?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it is the only way to prevent vendor lock-in.
Okay.
Think of exit readiness like building a skyscraper.
Yeah.
You don't assume the elevators will work flawlessly forever. You build a stairwell.
Right, a fire escape.
Getting your data into an AI system is always frictionless. Vendors make onboarding incredibly easy, but getting out is exactly where they trap you.
So what does that stairwell look like, according to the guide?
It requires demanding access control records. You have to prove you own the custom code or configurations. You need to establish clear, raw data export options and define the exact administrative handoff steps.
So you need it all in writing before you start.
You need a documented transition process. If the vendor doubles their price in 2 years, or if their model starts hallucinating, you need to know the mechanical steps to pack up your unstructured data and leave without taking your internal search offline for 6 months.
Okay, so we've planned our exit strategy and we know how to hit the eject button. But what actually causes a company to hit that button in the first place?
Good question.
This transitions us perfectly from what to look for on this scorecard to the landmines buried in the process. Because, let's be honest, vendors are highly incentivized to obscure the difficult parts of an integration.
Oh, absolutely. And the guide flags several major warning signs that should cause you to pause the evaluation immediately.
Like what?
A vague scope of work is a classic landmine. If the proposal leans heavily on buzzwords like, you know, synergy and AI-driven optimization, but it lacks a granular list of API connections and deliverables, walk away.
Just walk away right then.
Walk away. Another massive red flag is the lack of a rollback plan, meaning if you launch this AI search tool on a Friday, and it completely corrupts your existing intranet, Is there a documented process to revert to the old system by Monday morning?
That's terrifying. The one that stood out to me was a vendor who cannot explain the first 90 days post-launch.
Yes.
If they're brilliant at mapping out the sale and the implementation, but they go completely blank when you ask what happens on day two of actual usage, I mean, they're selling you a product, not a partnership.
Exactly. And the source also calls out internal mistakes. Over-customization before validating the core process seems to happen all the time.
Why do companies do that?
It is a profound lack of discipline, really. Teams buy a sophisticated tool and immediately want to tweak every single dial and toggle to match their highly idiosyncratic legacy workflows.
Before they even know if it works.
Right. They over-customize before they even verify if the baseline AI model actually understands their data.
And then there is the security dimension.
Oh man, the security dimension. This is so critical.
I know you love this part. The guide goes out of its way to emphasize that every tech decision in 2026 is a security decision. But let me play devil's advocate for a second.
Okay, go for it.
If we're just talking about an AI tool to help our marketing team with search visibility, why are we dragging this through a brutal cybersecurity audit? It's not our core financial database, right? It's marketing collateral.
See, that assumption right there is precisely how enterprise networks get breached.
Really? Just through marketing tools?
Yes. To do its job, this AI search visibility tool needs credentials. You are granting it access to analytics platforms, internal communication channels, and likely administrative privileges within your marketing stack.
Ah, I didn't think about the admin privileges.
Right. Attackers don't usually break down the front door of your financial database. They find a poorly secured third-party marketing integration, compromise those API keys, and use that access to pivot laterally into your deeper, more sensitive networks.
Oh, wow. It's like leaving the side window to the garage wide open because you figure the expensive jewelry is locked in the bedroom safe.
Exactly.
But once they are in the garage, they have all the time in the world to pick the lock to the house.
Precisely.
Mm.
You are protecting your core customer information by fiercely protecting these outer layers. That means you have to ask the vendor, how is access controlled? Are changes logged immutably? How are security incidents escalated to our internal team?
Man, that's heavy. Yeah. Which ties directly into another massive blind spot the guide highlights, which is hidden costs.
Yeah.
The source explicitly claims that the lowest initial estimate is not always the lowest total cost. I kind of liken this to buying a luxury car at an unbelievably great price, driving it off the lot, and 2 months later, the steering wheel locks up because you didn't pay the, like, steering wheel monthly subscription fee.
It's a great analogy.
So what does a genuinely transparent budget actually look like in this context?
Well, a transparent budget treats the software license as just the starting point. The real costs are human and operational. A true budget accounts for a paid discovery phase to map the data.
Right.
It includes the cost of the security review we just discussed. And it budgets heavily for internal training and user acceptance testing.
Because if you don't budget time and money to train your employees on how to prompt the new AI search, they'll just go back to manually digging through folders.
Exactly.
And your return on investment is effectively zero.
Exactly. The budget must also explicitly state what is excluded, the assumptions driving the pricing, and the exact financial mechanism for handling scope changes.
The hidden stuff.
Yeah. Vendors often artificially lower the initial estimate by hiding ongoing maintenance and integration support. If your budget doesn't account for post-launch adjustments, you will blow past your financial constraints by month 6. Guaranteed.
All right, so we've mapped the data, we've grilled the vendor with the 4 questions, we've planned our exit, audited the security, and built a realistic budget. Now we pivot to execution.
The hard part.
Yeah. And I want to address you, the listener, directly here. You might be running a mid-sized firm with maybe 50 employees, listening to this and thinking, I don't have the headcount for a massive bureaucratic rollout.
Right.
But the guide introduces an internal ownership model that is incredibly rigid, requiring 4 distinct roles.
It does. And it insists on these 4 roles because combining them is exactly what causes projects to collapse under their own weight.
Let's explore that, because typically a mid-sized company just dumps a new software project onto the lap of their IT director and says, make this work.
Oh, all the time.
Why does the guide insist we split this into 4 corners? The executive sponsor, the business owner, the technical owner, and the operational reviewer.
Because those 4 roles have inherently conflicting priorities. And that friction is a feature, not a bug.
Oh, interesting.
If you make the IT director both the business owner and the technical owner, they're going to prioritize technical ease over business outcomes.
Oh, I see.
they will implement the tool that is easiest to maintain, even if it doesn't actually solve the marketing team's search visibility problem.
That makes total sense. So the business owner is the person who originally said, we need to reduce response time. Their only job is holding the project to that metric.
Exactly.
The technical owner validates feasibility, basically making sure the AI doesn't break the existing infrastructure. What about the executive sponsor?
The executive sponsor is the bulldozer.
The bulldozer.
Yeah, they don't manage the day-to-day. They hold the budget and the political capital. When the technical owner and the business owner hit a wall because, say, a legacy department refuses to share their data, the executive sponsor steps in and removes the blocker.
Okay. And finally, the operational reviewer. This feels like the most critical yet maybe most ignored role in corporate technology.
It absolutely is. The operational reviewer is the reality check. They are the frontline employee who will actually use the tool every day.
Right.
The executive sponsor might love the strategic vision, and the tech owner might love the clean code, but the operational reviewer is the one who points out that the new AI tool takes 10 clicks to do what used to take 2.
Which entirely destroys their daily productivity.
Yes. If you skip this role, you end up launching a technically perfect system that your employees actively boycott.
It's a brilliant system of checks and balances. So once you have that team in place, the guide outlines a strict 90-day success plan. It breaks down logically, right? Days 0 to 30 are for clarifying your baseline current state and prioritizing the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
Days 31 to 60 are for piloting the single highest value improvement. You don't boil the ocean. You fix one workflow to expose the hidden risks.
Exactly.
Then days 61 to 90 are for reviewing results, documenting the lessons, and making the hard choice to expand or adjust.
But the linchpin of that entire 90-day plan, and honestly, perhaps the most important concept in the entire source document, is that the metrics for success must be chosen on day zero before the implementation begins.
Yeah. The guide uses a phrase here that I found staggering. It says, so teams don't invent success after the fact.
Yes.
Let's dig into the psychology of that. Why is inventing success such a pervasive problem?
Well, it comes down to the sunk cost fallacy and cognitive dissonance.
Okay.
Imagine a team spends 6 months and $100,000 integrating a massive AI search tool. The original goal was to reduce customer churn by 10%. They launched the tool, and a month later, customer churn hasn't budged.
It's exactly the same.
Right. Admitting that failure triggers massive cognitive dissonance. So human psychology kicks in as a defense mechanism.
They start looking for a win.
Exactly. The team will frantically dig through the analytics dashboard until they find some metric that went up. Maybe employee login frequency increased by 40%. They will take that metric, put it on a PowerPoint slide, and declare the project a massive success just to save face.
It's totally self-preservation. But it's devastating for the business because the original operational gap is still bleeding money.
Right.
So setting the metrics, whether it's downtime reduction, conversion rates, or lead quality on day zero, completely removes that human psychology from the equation. It forces intellectual honesty.
Yes. A 90-day plan with predefined metrics keeps an AI initiative, which is inherently complex and prone to scope creep, from becoming an open-ended, budget-draining black hole.
Yeah.
It gives leadership a scheduled, unemotional checkpoint to look at the data and say, this isn't working, pull the plug before they burn another $500,000.
To help maintain that objectivity, the source also provides practical advice on bringing in outside perspective. It mentions involving an integration partner like Technegian, but explicitly states to do this before decisions are final. Why the emphasis on timing?
Because if you wait until you have already signed the contract with the software vendor to bring in an integration partner, you have missed the window for objective architectural advice.
You've already bought the machinery.
Exactly. A partner brought in early can help properly scope the work. They identify if you need a Microsoft 365 data cleanup before the AI can function, or they handle that rigorous security audit.
Right.
They help map the reality of your infrastructure against the vendor's promises. And the source also points to checking resources like developers.google.com and perplexity.ai just for broader context on how these models actually parse data.
So what does this all mean when we pull back the lens? We've been talking specifically about an AI search visibility scorecard for OC brands today.
Yeah.
But the underlying mechanics we've extracted, assigning inherently conflicted roles to force checks and balances, building the exit stairwell before you move in, and defining success metrics before you start to defeat the sunk cost fallacy, I mean, that is a universal framework.
Oh, completely.
You could apply this to adopting a new HR system, restructuring a logistics supply chain, or even just signing a new marketing agency.
It is a masterclass in mitigating risk. It transforms technology adoption from a chaotic, vendor-driven transaction into a disciplined, internally controlled process.
Yeah.
It ensures you're actually solving the business problem rather than just treating the symptom with a shiny new interface.
It forces you to stop being the starving grocery shopper.
Exactly.
I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought today. It's inspired by the guide's intense focus on exit readiness and intellectual honesty. We spend so much energy, stress, and capital trying to find the one perfect enterprise tool that will permanently revolutionize our business for the next decade.
Right.
But considering the breakneck speed of AI development in 2026, what if that is entirely the wrong goal? What if the ultimate mark of a successful digital integration isn't how deeply it roots itself into your company, but rather how easily you can unplug it and replace it with something superior tomorrow?
Wow, that changes the entire paradigm.
Right.
If you treat your corporate technology architecture as highly modular and inherently disposable, your agility becomes your primary competitive advantage.
Exactly. The ability to break the lease without penalty is vastly more valuable than the longevity of any single piece of software.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Before your next major vendor meeting, take those four golden questions with you. Demand empirical evidence, assign real internal ownership, name the risks out loud, and define your 90-day metrics before you spend a single dollar. It won't just save your budget, it might save your sanity. Until next time.